This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Joe McMillan joins us in studio to discuss the unwanted development proposal at 143rd and Flum. You'll also hear from World Ocean Radio towards the end of our show. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. EnvironmentalDefenseFund.org reports, on October 23, 2015, a massive natural gas leak erupted at a storage well operated by SoCal Gas in Aliso Canyon outside of Los Angeles. The leak has caused serious health impacts for nearby residents of the Porter Ranch neighborhood, and it opened eyes across the state and the country to the problem of oil and gas methane pollution. Weeks later, the leak is ongoing, and the gas company estimates it will be spring of 2016 before it can be stopped. Methane, the main component of natural gas, is a powerful short-term climate forcer with over 80 times the warming power of carbon dioxide in the first 20 years after it is released. Methane is estimated to be leaking out of the Aliso Canyon site at a rate of about 62 million standard cubic feet per day. The daily leakage has the same 20-year climate impact as driving 7 million cars a day. The Associated Press through Yahoo News reports, in a report released Monday, the Environment New Jersey Research and Policy Center says carbon pollution equal to 1.1 million cars could be eliminated by 2020 with a rapid expansion in wind power off the Jersey shore. The report says as much as 1,700 megawatts of wind power could be built in the state in the next 5 years if the state moves quickly. That would be enough to power more than 500,000 homes, the group calculated. The report comes before an anticipated vote in the state legislature within the next week on an experimental wind farm off Atlantic City and appeared as an attempt to drum up support for the bill. It would permit, but not require, the State Board of Public Utilities to approve a wind project off the coast of Atlantic City. Approval for such projects typically takes years, and in the region, only Rhode Island has begun one. That five-turbine project is set to open later this year. Under the recent pace of approvals, it is unlikely a project that has not yet begun could be opened by 2020. Offshore wind is a key component to New Jersey's goal of generating 22.5% renewable energy by 2021. The NewYorkTimes.com reports, clouds help amplify El Niño's effect on the atmosphere to a greater degree than once thought, a new study reports. In El Niño conditions, sea surface temperatures in the Pacific Ocean become unusually warm, and tall thunderheads known as cumulonimbus clouds form over the water. Above them, a layer of colder cirrus clouds also appear. The cirrus clouds trap the heat. Quote, they act as a blanket and further warm the atmosphere, said Thorsten Morriston, a meteorologist at the Max Planck Institute for Meteorology in Germany and one of the study's authors. In the areas that surround El Niño, cumulonimbus clouds are rarer, and the sea is more often covered by lower clouds, which cool the air. Dr. Morriston and his colleagues compared climate model simulations that accounted for the role of clouds with models that did not. They found that if clouds are not factored in, the strength of El Niño event is underestimated by about two-thirds. GreenEnvironmentNews.com reports, EPA Region 7 has announced its decision to proceed with the installation of a physical isolation barrier for the Westlake Landfill Superfund location in Bridge 10, Missouri. The decision also calls for the installation of additional engineering controls, such as cooling loops, to prevent potential impacts that could result if a subsurface smoldering event were to come into contact with the radioactive materials contained in the Westlake Landfill. Quote, finding a solution to mitigate the potential impacts of a subsurface smoldering event is a top priority for the community and a top priority for EPA. Today's announcement is the first step in moving forward with the installation of a physical barrier and other engineering controls to address this issue, said EPA Region 7 Administrator Mark Haig. The agency will continue to work closely with the Missouri Department of Natural Resources, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and other stakeholders as final projects are developed. Construction activities will be carried out under the direction and oversight of EPA and with expert support from the Army Corps of Engineers. 5 Missouri school districts have been awarded a total of $240,000 by the EPA to replace or retrofit 13 older diesel school buses. School districts include South Harrison R2, Holcomb R3, Winston R6, and Sherwood Cass R8 school districts. Oh, also Blue Springs R4 school district. The Missouri awards are part of an excess of $7 million in rebates to replace or retrofit 400 older diesel school buses. The rebates are going to 85 school bus fleets in 35 states, each of which will gain rebates through EPA's Diesel Emissions Reduction Act, or DERA, funding. The new and retrofitted buses will reduce pollutants such as nitrogen oxides and particulate matter that are linked to numerous health problems, including asthma and lung damage. Since 2008, the DERA plan has funded an excess of 650 clean diesel plants across the country, reducing emissions in excess of 60,000 engines. And that completes the news for today, and I'd like to introduce Mr. Mike Murphy.
Thank you very much. Good evening, folks. Happy New Year. Welcome to Eco Radio KC. Joe McMillan is our guest tonight. He's with a group called the 143rd Street Corridor Homeowners Group, and this group is formed in opposition to a proposed development at 143rd and Flum, and Joe will explain all that to us. And they are the City Council, Olathe City Council, is meeting tomorrow night at 7 p.m. on this subject. At Olathe City Hall and the Council Chambers at 100 East Santa Fe, Olathe, Kansas. We'll be sure to give out that info again. But first, welcome, Joe.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. First of all, I appreciate the interest of you and the station on this issue. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sure, absolutely. So, Joe, you've lived in this 143rd Street corridor in Olathe for many years now.
Yes, 34 years this month.
What attracted you to the area?
We liked it because of the atmosphere. It's rural nature, but still close to amenities in Kansas City. We like the wildlife in the area. We like the community of people that we live with, and there was just a good feel for it, and continues to have a good community feel 34 years later.
What kind of wildlife?
At our house, my wife is an avid bird watcher and has belonged to the Cornell Birdwatch program for 25 years now, and we have a property with an acre of woods attached to it that's certified by the National Wildlife Federation. The wildlife we routinely get, in addition to a multitude of songbirds, are owls, hawks. We have a nice little group of deer that come into our feeders every evening. We've watched does and fawns grow up and turn into bucks. We have coyotes in the area. An evil family of raccoons that routinely attack our bird feeders. We've seen turkeys in our yard and foxes. And very rarely a bobcat.
Really? Wow. Well, that's fascinating. And so you've been there 32 years. What kind of changes have you seen?
Within our neighborhood, not much. We moved in at a time when the housing addition was reaching completion. There is a housing addition that was built just north of Harmony View West, which is where I live, that is Heritage Hills. That was completed. Most of the development in that area has gone further south down to 179th Street, along Quivira and so on. There's a very nice dog park that has adjoined our neighborhood, the Pet Ranch. They're very good neighbors. They help keep an eye out for lost pets. And for the most part, it's communities, residential communities, very family-oriented. Churches have been built. So most of the building has been complete, but it's been basically residential and religious institutions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we just mentioned that the 143rd Street Corridor Homeowners Group, is it safe to say that you guys came together in as a result of proposed development in the area? Or
yes. Yeah. One in particular on the southeast corner of 143rd and Flum is an agricultural area that is immediately north of the Johnson County Executive Airport. Several plans have been proposed for that property over the years. I believe this is the fourth one that I'm aware of. In the past, they've failed because of high-density housing under the flight path for Johnson County Airport. And poor planning for roads that would give access to any of the housing, and also concerns about potential flooding by capping the land there. It's the highest point in Johnson County, just slightly less than the airport. And any rain that falls on that property drains off in all four directions. And it creates, as it is right now, problems with Flum Road flooding and Tomahawk Creek drainage system. So we've come together because in the past the plans did not take into consideration traffic patterns, the impact to the surrounding housing areas, and the inherent risks to increased flooding and increased traffic on roads that aren't capable of handling it.
Okay. So the Tomahawk Creek, where does that, how close does that come to 143rd and Flum?
It's immediately on the north side of 143rd Street. I'm not too good at distances. I'd say probably 100 yards from the property in question.
Okay, and maybe you don't know this, but so I'm trying to remember. Tomahawk Creek, that runs almost into Missouri, doesn't it?
Yes, eventually it dumps into the Missouri River, and it's one of the tributaries that feeds the area and drains water from that area we live in.
Sure. And do you know how? I'm assuming you're not at the beginning of Tomahawk Creek.
No,
goes.
It starts further west, runs through this area towards the east. And right now, on normal rains, it's not unusual to see flooding of the hiking and bike pathways along the creek to the east of 143rd and Flum.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the folks interested in developing that area. There's a Schlegel and Associates who are the actual developer, but there's a funding group as well?
Yes, Schlegel and funding by the Mangini Group. Excuse me a second.
Sure.
The Mangini Group has a team of a financial team that provides funding for this development. And excuse me.
That's okay.
So the Schlegel group has been developing plans for this area that I know of since 1995. Most recently, before this one, which is called the Willows, was Wheatley Hills that was proposed and defeated 2 years ago. And so this is a modification of previous plans that we've seen over the years. It's got some very good features. The density is something that most of the community would support, the density of housing. Mm-hmm. They've left open areas for emergency landing for the airport. But the one thing that they have not addressed in any of their plans over the last 20 years is the access to and from their development. Their plans have been and continue to be that they will funnel the traffic onto roads that are not capable of handling it. This development will be in two configurations. To the east, they plan on feeding traffic into two neighborhoods with curving streets that are poorly lighted, that don't have curbs or sidewalks. And the streets in these areas were originally built as the communities were built as suburban communities without the design for high volume through traffic. Mm-hmm. And with the current plan, there would be 120 houses on the west side that, according to the Olathe traffic manager's estimates, would result in 10 trips per household per day, which on that side would be 1,200 car trips, that would use Flum for access, and Flum routinely floods on normal rain. It happened a couple of weeks ago. On the east side, there would be 66 homes, and that would result in 660 auto trips through Harmony View West and Heritage Hills, which are the ones that I said have narrow streets, no curbs, and poor sight lines.
Okay, so take us back. So this group,
Schlegel and
Mangini. I should have written down Mangini. Okay. So Mangini and Schlegel presumably own this land where the proposed development is, or some combination of them.
Yeah, that's my assumption, yes.
And so presumably they made a gamble several years. When they went in there, so first of all, I don't know that we've addressed, like, there are issues surrounding being development too close to an airport.
Yes. The Johnson County Airport Commission has the right to control how close housing is to the landing approaches to an airport, how high the buildings will be, and how dense they will be. The original plan in 1995 had high-density housing in line with the airport. The airport denied them. This is a piece of property that has joint governorship by the City of Olathe and Johnson County Airport Commission. At that time, the group sued the airport, sued the county, I believe, to get access to this housing area. It went as far as the state Supreme Court and was denied. So that's been an ongoing issue with this area. When they acquired the property, they knew that there were problems with drainage areas, that they would need to do something about access to new housing with adequate roads. they knew about high power tension lines that run across the property. And they knew that 143rd Street and Flum were poorly built, poorly maintained roads. After the last issue, the city passed a bond, and they will be improving 143rd Street, but to make it slightly wider. They'll remove the hills, even out the sight lines. And that is not planned to start until 2017. At the recent Planning Commission meeting, the traffic engineer for Olathe said that there are no plans in place to improve Flum, which will receive the majority of vehicle traffic from this area. And as it is now, it's narrow, it's congested, and is used by parents trying to take their kids to several schools in the area. 143rd and Flum will back up on Flum, oh, maybe a quarter of a mile during school times in the mornings.
Oh, wow.
So they knew about the problems. They've been trying to work around them. We've tried to give them a solution to the problem, which is if they would just acquire two strips of land so that they could drop access roads from their property down to 151st Street, which can handle the traffic. I and the homeowners I know of would support their plan. They're planning on building houses that run anywhere from $400,000 to $600,000, so we're sure that the, unless I'm badly mistaken, $600,000 will be a nice addition to the area and won't affect home values. One of our neighbors, for the last 3 years that I know of, has had a proposal that he's trying to get them to listen to when they've lost these various battles. His name is Bill Nigro. He has developed a plan and funding to set up what he calls the Blue Valley School System Ag Program, where he would acquire the land. It would be funded by someone other than the city and the county. He's got support for that. And they'd make these schools available to, or I'm sorry, this property available to the schools to develop agricultural programs, to do wildlife studies, and so on. During that 3 years, he has constantly contacted them, including an open meeting, and saying, how much do you want for it? I've got the money. We'll buy it from you to set this up. And he's never received a return phone call from the investment group.
So it's not, you know, that's interesting information. So it's not like they're, you know, they're stuck with this. They made this investment. You know, they've been at least given one out right there.
Is that, yes.
Yeah.
And we've given them a way that we could support it with just drop two roads down and not try to dump this traffic into neighborhoods that aren't available to handle it. When we raised the question about Flum Road, they said that the traffic engineer said that there's no plans to develop it in the foreseeable future, maybe in 6 to 10 years. That's a lot of traffic to be on that road, a road that floods routinely.
Wow. We're going to take our first break, but when we come back, if you'd like to join in on the conversation, the number to call is 816-931-KKFI. 816-931-5534. Either one will do. But first, we're going to play you some messages.
Hey, it's Junebug, and it's time for the infamous Blues Kitchen Live Show. We will be broadcasting live from BB's Lawnside Barbecue on Saturday, January 23rd from 8 to 11 a.m. Three blues bands, barbecue breakfast, and don't forget the Bloodies. That's Saturday morning, January 23rd, 8 a.m. $10 at the door, with proceeds benefiting your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI. Advance tickets and info at kkfi.org.
When you were a kid and got hurt, you'd go to your mother.
For TLC.
Someone to stand up for you.
Same goes now if you're hurt by a drunk driving crash. Just go to the Mothers.
Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
MAD for short. Call 877-MAD-HELP.
Help and no charge, of course.
Of course.
Learn more about how we help victims of drunk driving next time you visit at MAD.org.
This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Tips for preventing contaminated stormwater runoff on this current cast. Rainwater is naturally filtered as it soaks into the ground. But in cities, rain lands on impermeable streets and rooftops.
And as the stormwater flows over these areas, it picks up things like trash and chemicals, sand and grit, bacteria, other pollutants, and then it flows into our local rivers, streams, lakes, and oceans, often without treatment to remove these sorts of pollutants.
That's Rachel Herbert of the EPA's Office of Wastewater Management. She says no matter how far you live from the water, avoid littering. Check your car for leaks, pick up pet waste, and properly dispose of paint, chemicals, and used motor oil. This will help protect both local and distant water resources. Support for CurrentCast comes from the Mitsubishi Corporation Foundation for the Americas. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
And CurrentCast, pretty right, timely there. That's kind of what we've been talking about. So part of the issue with development is that it creates increased runoff because the ground isn't there to absorb it. And as the case they just made in CurrentCast is that you when water is running across pavement or roofs or whatever, it's picking up pollutants along the way and carrying it down. And in your case, into the Tomahawk Creek, or ultimately into the Missouri River, ultimately into the Mississippi River, and on into the Gulf of Mexico.
Right. And I'm not a hydrologist, but one of our neighbors has studied this issue in depth. And his best estimate is that based upon their current housing plans and the streets, when you cap the amount of land that will be eaten up by streets, driveways, and roofing, it should increase water runoff by at least 22%. That's a lot.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Especially in a flood-prone area.
Yeah, exactly. And so you did mention, you and I had a little chat outside in the green room before we came in. You talked about the city of Olathe's, I don't know whether this was the Planning Commission's proposal with regard to how to deal with all that water. You mentioned a pipeline.
Yes. There were one of the plans from the Schlegel developers, which is apparently endorsed by the water engineer from Olathe, is to capture the increased runoff in drains and pipes and rapidly transfer it to Tomahawk Creek. Now, what's distressing to us is when the Olathe engineer was discussing it and somebody said, well, what impact will they have on Olathe? And he essentially said, we're getting it out of Olathe. Once it crosses the city boundary, it's no longer an issue for us, mm-hmm. which means we're going to take the wastewater and dump it as rapidly as we can into Overland Park and let them live with it. As an Olathe resident, I'm distressed by that.
Yeah, and I imagine your Overland Park neighbors might feel the same way.
Yes, yeah. They are, and are very vocal about it. They're part of the 143rd Street corridor group.
Okay, so I'm looking at your press release here that Kimberly Stern sent me. That's how I became aware of this issue. And she says there are hundreds of homeowners that are in this group. and from both Overland Park and Olathe.
Yes. I'm not sure the exact number. We began developing a mailing list to keep each other informed during the last iteration of the Schlegel plan. And right now, I maintain the mailing list, and we have 186 names on the list.
Wow.
And, excuse me, that does not include further transmission into Homes Association Facebook pages and so on. So I know that there are at least 186 people that have said they're interested and they want to be kept informed of this.
Okay, great. And do you guys meet at all, or do you conduct a lot of this via email? Or
It's usually by email. It's an ad hoc group. We get together when there's an issue. There was a small group that tried to prepare for this upcoming meeting tomorrow to decide what are the key topics that we should verify with the neighbors, and that is water, road safety, and the impact of the overall environment that we live in.
Right. Right. And so what's your and so tell us about the there was a planning commission meeting that you
yes.
alluded to.
That was on December 14th.
That was at City Hall.
Yes. There within the city of Olathe there is a planning commission that evaluates proposed developments that could be very simple, like putting a chicken coop in your backyard to a housing addition. Once they review it, they may approve it or deny it. And when they approve it, that approval means that they'll recommend approval to the city council. At the planning commission meeting, it was a pretty full room. Other than the developers, every speaker that stepped up was in opposition to this, and it got to the point where the chairman of the committee said, all right, we get the point. You're concerned about water. You're concerned about safety. You're concerned about the children in your neighborhood. If nobody has anything else, I'm going to end discussion here. And then they unanimously approved it to go on to the city council.
Unanimously?
Yes.
Yeah. And so is the planning commission, like, is that like a subcommittee of city council? Are the members on the city council? Or
No. Members are not on the city council. I believe they're volunteers. They're an advisory group. I don't know. I'm not a politician,
so I don't know
exactly how it works. The city council, those are elected members.
So I'm guessing that the city council appoints, or the mayor appoints?
I believe so, but I'm not sure.
And so were you surprised that it was unanimously approved?
Yes, and frustrated because we've been raising issues of safety. The Planning Commission's charter says that they will do that they need to do three things: ensure the safety of the community, any new plans, ensure the safety of the community, that any plans are in compliance with Plan Olathe, which is a uniform development ordinance, and that nothing be developed that would affect the character of the surrounding neighborhoods. Okay, well, we've got two issues that we tried to raise with them. One, this does indeed affect the safety of the current residents, and it affects the character of the neighborhood when you try to turn curving residential streets into throughways. And it may be in compliance, technical compliance, with Olathe's uniform code for development. But two of those three legs of the mission we felt were not being met. And we tried to explain it to them. And the offshoot was they listened, said, all right, we've heard enough, we get your message, and then they approved it. Frankly, I'm taken aback. I don't know how to explain that.
What incentive is there for the, not just, you know, if the city, like, why would the city council want to approve it? Is it because it increases the tax base? Is that the main?
Certainly, that would be one of them. And I think the city council, in all honesty, wants to do something that will benefit everyone. And new residents, new tax base, that would be good to endorse development within the city. That's always good. Everybody in our neighborhoods are involved in business one way or another, and like me, they may be retired from mm-hmm. it. We understand profit, but not profit at the expense of the safety and the character of what are right now very good home-oriented communities.
Mm-hmm. So what's your fear, like worst case scenario, like, you know, if this goes through, you know, what would your neighborhood look? How would your neighborhood be different 10 years from now, let's say?
There would be flooding to the point where it would, I believe, irreparably damage the houses to the north of us along Tomahawk Creek. I believe there would be increased accidents in the neighborhoods to the east and along Flum Road. And I raised a question at the Planning Commission meeting that I received no answer to. I said, if this is approved, if they continue, the developers continue to push this through and the city approves it, and God forbid a child is injured or, worst case, killed, who in the Schlegel, Mangini teams, or city or county offices will step forward and say, I take responsibility for that?
Right.
I ask that question, and I have not received an answer to date.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's when you mentioned, like, you know, the city wants to make sure, try and make everyone happy. And so, you know, I started thinking, well, you residents in this area are, you know, you're voting, you know, you vote in that area.
Yep.
Schlegel and Mangini, once this is developed and sold, presumably it's sold, like, to individual homeowners. It's
yes.
not like a – so then they're out of the community at that point, right?
Yes, their responsibility, as they said, then shifts to the homeowners association for the development, and they have no further responsibility. Any maintenance of the streets, the waterways, the dry retention ponds that they plan to put in will be the responsibility of the homeowners, and they'll have no further responsibility for it.
All right. Well, so tell us about these dry these retention ponds.
One of the things that is new in this Schlegel plan is that they are going to put in, I think, four, maybe five dry retention basins, which are basically dry ponds, to catch rainwater, not keep it, but to slow down its transfer off of the property. And they're designed to drain the water away. So it's interesting. Their legal team several years ago argued against them in another development, and this time they're arguing for them. Nothing that our neighbor who's been studying hydrology has seen would indicate that they are effective They can slow it down, but they have to be constantly maintained. If they're not, they're totally ineffective.
Okay, so just to remind our listeners, we're talking to Joe McMillan, and he's with the 143rd Street Corridor Homeowners Group. And Joe and many of his neighbors are going to be at this city council meeting in Olathe tomorrow evening at 7 p.m.
Yes.
And that's at the council chambers, Olathe City Hall. And that's 100 East Santa Fe, Olathe, in Olathe. And Joe, I presume you're going to be one of the speakers.
Yes,
tomorrow.
I'm already on the list, and I've sent in my slides for the presentation, which is another point of frustration. We were told earlier this last week that we would not be allowed to show our slides to the audience, that we had to submit them, and that the city clerk would print them out and hand them to the city council members for them to review while we're talking. Because of that, I have deleted slides 2 through 7 from my presentation, and I will begin on slide 8 through 13.
Okay.
We were also told they didn't want to hear anything they've heard before, which is something of a challenge when we've been talking about road safety and flooding for years.
Yeah, really. Okay, we're going to take another break. And we still have time if you want to join in on the conversation. But before we do, let me ask you, Joe, you said you're on the list to speak. So say someone's listening right now and are hearing about this and didn't realize there was a meeting tomorrow night. Is it too late for them to get on the list to speak, or how would they go about doing that?
No, there will be a speaker sign-up sheet in the lobby outside of the council chambers, which is on the first floor. Prior to the meeting, they will need to sign their name, put their name on the speaker's list at least 10 minutes before the beginning of the meeting. If they're not sure whether or not they want to speak, they can put their name down, and then when they call them, all they have to do is say pass.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we'll be right back, and there's still another chance for you to get in on the conversation, 816-931-5534.
Hi, I'm Tim Burkett, author of Nothing Holy About It. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the Zen of being just who you are.
New Dimensions airs at 5 a.m. on Tuesdays.
1966, the Chiefs brought Kansas City their very first AFL championship. They shared Municipal Stadium with someone called the Kansas City Athletics. Batman made its TV debut that year, and albums such as Pet Sounds, Revolver, and Blonde on Blonde were all the rage. This is Mike Murphy. Join me for a look back on 1966, half a century ago, on your Wednesday morning buzz from 6 to 8 a.m.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The town of Milton Keynes, located about 50 miles north of London, is starting to experiment with what could be the future of transportation, driverless cars. Brian Matthews is head of Milton Keynes Transport Innovation. He says the town has a growing demand for an efficient way to get around.
We have forecast here in Milton Keynes that travel demand will increase by around 60% over the next 20 years.
Officials decided a tram or monorail system would be too expensive and not well suited to the town's layout, so they needed a more innovative approach. They found it. Milton Keynes is now testing battery-operated driverless pods. These two-seater vehicles use lasers and cameras to navigate on the sidewalks.
Having them operating on footways gives the opportunity for door-to-door journeys to take place between business and business, retail outlet, shop, and other facilities.
Matthew says the pods use space more efficiently and make better use of travel routes.
We expect that we will reduce congestion, make the load across the network better, and therefore improve on air quality.
If testing goes well, the town plans to provide up to 40 of these pods for public use within 2 years. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And here we are back in the studio, Eco Radio KC. This is Mike Murphy here. Natural Ease also here in the studio. And we're talking to Joe McMillan of the 143rd Street Homeowners, 143rd Street, 3rd Street Corridor Homeowners Group, right?
Yeah, it's a lot easier to say the homeowners that live around 143rd and Flum. Yeah.
Right. So right before we took the break, I asked you about people getting to speak at the city council meeting. Again, the city council meeting is tomorrow night regarding this development at the 143rd and Flum. Do you have to be a city resident to speak? Because I'm thinking some folks from Overland Park might want to get a few words in about the city's suggestion of just sending all the water in their direction.
Yeah, the answer to that is no, you don't need to be. I know that there are some affected homeowners on the north side of 143rd who are in Overland Park who have already put their name on the list to speak. They're going to be impacted by this, and so anybody who feels be impacted by it has the right to stand up and express their concerns.
Okay. And
or I should say, if they're in favor of it, they have the right to say that as well.
That's right. That's right. And so do you expect a large turnout tomorrow?
Yes.
And you had a pretty decent turnout at the Planning Commission meeting.
Yes. We've communicated within the various homes associations. We have every indication that it'll be a high turnout tomorrow, as it was in 2013 and during the recent Planning Commission meeting.
Okay. Do you have any, have you thought beyond tomorrow? Like, you know, give me like, you know, what do you plan to do if it passes, and what do you plan to do if it doesn't?
Well, if it passes, we will be concerned about the safety of the neighborhood. I don't know how we can try to control high-volume traffic through our neighborhood if the city council says that's a desirable thing. Okay. If it doesn't pass, we'll fall back on the recommendation that we made to Mangini over the last several years, which is we can get behind the housing development, the cost, the density, is fine with most of us. All they have to do is drop two access roads straight down to 151st Street. And the roads that they're planning now through Canaan Lane and 146th Street could be gated emergency access points for fire departments, police departments to use, and to also be used as a hiking path for people who want to walk in what is right now a couple of very walkable neighborhoods.
Okay. You mentioned earlier when we were outside in the green room, you talked about having to be within 200 feet in order to file a protest. What does that mean, file a protest?
Well, the city of Olathe has a restriction that only people who live, who are property owners, not live, but who are property owners within 200 feet of the proposed development can file a petition. Anybody outside of that area does not have that right. Now, if you file a petition you meet the minimum, which we still don't understand what the minimum is, then the city council has to approve any plan by a 75% majority rather than a simple majority. We met that. But what is frustrating is of the hundreds of homeowners who are affected by this, We notified the city recently that we planned on filing two protests, individual protest petitions, which is what we did. But we're also going to file a petition with the names of the homeowners who will be affected by this, who do not want this to go through. They said it would be accepted, but nobody would look at it, which is frustrating.
Yeah, I can understand that. So once again, the city hall, the city council meeting in Olathe is tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And if folks want to get a hold of your group, what's the best way to do that?
Actually, at this point, I would suggest that they plan on attending tomorrow, either for or against it. As far as contacting our group...
can I give out, I mean, Kimberly's information? She's put this out in the... So Kimberly Stern is who I got the press release from, and her phone number is 913-449-4294. And her email address is kimberly@sternwrites.com. That's sternwrites.com. kimberly@sternwrites.com. Joe McMillan, final thoughts before we turn it over to Natural Leaf for the calendar?
No, I really appreciate the interest that you've shown and the support that we've received from people throughout this process in the media and elsewise.
Okay. Well, thank you very much,
thank you,
Joe. And bow over to Natural Leaf for the calendar.
Thanks, Mike. On January 10th, from 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., more than 2,000 bald eagles are typically reported around Missouri's largest rivers and reservoirs during the winter, making Missouri one of the leaders in bald eagle viewing among the lower 48 states. The Missouri Department of Conservation is hosting a viewing event at Smithview Lake, just north of Kansas City, that will include live eagle programs, exhibits, and activities, along with guides to help participants look for eagles. This free event's from 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. on Sunday, January 10th, at Smithville Lake Paradise Point Golf Course. You can find more information by visiting mdc.mo.gov. And on January 13th, from 4 to 6 p.m., the Environmental Management Commission promotes environmental awareness and resource efficiency to Kansas City leaders and staff to assist the progress of the city towards sustainability. The general public is encouraged to attend and observe meetings and to join and participate in its efforts. The meetings are held the second Wednesday of each month, so the next one is from 4 to 6 p.m. on Wednesday, January 13th. These meetings are held at the Mid-America Regional Council Rivergate Center at 600 Broadway on the second floor. You can find more information about this meeting at kcmo.gov. The Missouri Department of Conservation and the Missouri Department of Transportation invite Missouri public, private, and homeschool students in grades K through 8 to help fight litter in the Show Me State and to have creative and educational fun by participating in the 2016 Yes You Can Make Missouri Litter Free Trash Can Decorating Contest. Find more information about joining this contest by visiting our EcoRadio Facebook page. And finally, in Overland Park, volunteers are needed throughout the year to stencil Dump No Waste Drains to Stream on storm inlets throughout the city. The message reminds residents that dumping items in the storm drainage system not only is against city ordinance, but it also pollutes the waters and rivers and streams, which is used for drinking and bathing. Find more information about this also on our Eco Radio Facebook page.
I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. I always had a daydream, the poet Elizabeth Bishop wrote to her friend Robert Lowell, of being a lighthouse keeper, absolutely alone. Bishop lived on islands and near the shore as often as she could, Nantucket and Cuttyhunk off Massachusetts, Nova Scotia and Newfoundland, Key West, North Haven Island in Maine. Here is a poem published in the New Yorker in 1947 that pertains to the new year, distills many years of Bishop's seaside meditations, and evokes the clarity of meaning contained in personal encounter with the world ocean. At the fish houses. Although it is a cold evening, down by one of the fish houses, an old man sits netting, his net in the gloaming almost invisible, a dark purple-brown, and his shuttle worn and polished. The air smells so strong of codfish it makes one's nose run and one's eyes water. The five fish houses have sharply peaked roofs and narrow, cleated gangplanks that slant up to storerooms in the gables for the wheelbarrows to be pushed up and down on. All is silver, the heavy surface of the sea, swelling slowly as if considering spilling over, is opaque, but the silver of the benches, the lobster pots and masts scattered among the wild jagged rocks, is of an apparent translucence like the small old buildings with an emerald moss growing on their shoreward walls. The big fish tubs are completely lined with layers of beautiful herring scales, and the wheelbarrows are similarly plastered with creamy iridescent coats of mail, with small iridescent flies crawling on them. Up on the little slope behind the houses, set in the sparse, bright sprinkle of grass, is an ancient wooden capstan, cracked, with two long bleached handles and some melancholy stains like dried blood where the ironwork has rusted. The old man accepts a lucky strike. He was a friend of my grandfather. We talk of the decline in the population and of codfish and herring while he waits for a herring boat to come in. There are sequins on his vest and on his hands. He has scraped the scales, the principal beauty, from unnumbered fish with that black old knife, the blade of which is almost worn away. Down at the water's edge, at the place where they haul up the boats, up the long ramp descending into the water, thin silver tree trunks are laid horizontally across the gray stones, down and down, at intervals of 4 or 5 feet. Cold, dark, deep, and absolutely clear, element bearable to no mortal, to fish and to seals. One seal particularly, I've seen here evening after evening. He was curious about me. He was interested in music, like me a believer in total immersion, so I used to sing him Baptist hymns. I also sang A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. He stood up in the water and regarded me steadily, moving his head a little. Then he would disappear, then suddenly emerge almost in the same spot, with a sort of shrug, as if it were against his better judgment. Cold, dark, deep, and absolutely clear, the clear, gray, icy water. Back behind us, the dignified, tall firs begin, bluish, associating with their shadows. A million Christmas trees stand waiting for Christmas. The water seems suspended, above the rounded gray and blue-gray stones. I've seen it over and over, the same sea, the same, slightly, indifferently swinging above the stones, icily free above the stones and then the world. If you should dip your hand in, your wrist would ache immediately. Your bones would begin to ache and your hand would burn as if the water were a transmutation of fire that feeds on stones and burns with a dark gray flame. If you tasted it, it would first taste bitter, then briny, then surely burn your tongue. It is like what we imagine knowledge to be, dark, salt, clear, moving, utterly free, drawn from the cold, hard mouth of the world, derived from the rocky breasts forever, flowing and drawn, and since our knowledge is historical, flowing and flown. Best wishes for the new year from World Ocean Radio and the World Ocean Observatory.
World Ocean Radio is produced by the World Ocean Observatory in association with WERU-FM, Blue Hill, Maine. World Ocean Radio is distributed by the Public Radio Exchange and the Pacifica Network. Find our podcast on iTunes and at worldoceanobservatory.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.